This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The G7 summit has ended in France with President Trump saying that he's open to meeting with Iran's leader. We get more from AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
Summit host Emmanuel Macron says there's now a roadmap for ending the nuclear impasse between Washington and Tehran and hopes the two presidents will meet in the coming weeks. President Trump says he's willing.
If the circumstances were correct or the right, I would certainly agree to that.
Macron and other world leaders have been trying to salvage the nuclear deal from which Trump pulled the U.S. last year. Macron made the surprise move of inviting Iran's top diplomat to the summit. And even though the president did not meet with him, says he feels good about progress on a deal.
It may not be immediately, but I think ultimately we're going to do something.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Leaders of the group of seven wealthy nations agreed to release more than 20 million of emergency aid to help countries battle wildfires in the Amazon rainforest. French President Emmanuel Macron said this on Monday. We get more from Reuters' Nathan Frandino.
The aid package comes as tensions flare between Macron and Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro. Macron last week accused the conservative Bolsonaro of lying about his environmental commitments. Bolsonaro, who wants to open the Amazon to more farming and mining, on Sunday mocked Macron's wife on Facebook. And on Monday, he questioned Macron's intentions. So far, nearly 80,000 fires have been recorded in Brazil this year through the weekend. Many of those fires are thought to have been started deliberately. Some 44,000 troops are stationed in the northern Amazon region to help. Officials say the G7 plan would be rolled out in two stages. The first stage involves sending firefighters and water bombers. The second involves protecting the forests and their biodiversity, then reforesting the region. Macron added that the G7 would draw up an initiative for the Amazon to be launched next month at the UN General Assembly.
Reuters, Nathan Frandino. This is VOA News. U.S. President Trump voiced new optimism Monday that a trade deal could be reached with China to end the tit-for-tat war between the world's two largest economies. Mr. Trump told reporters at the G7 summit that China had called top U.S. trade representatives and said, "Let's get back to the table." He said that the vice premier, Liu He, China's top trade negotiator, wants to make a deal. And he says that says it all. But the U.S. leader quickly added that this has to be a deal that's better for us, meaning America. He again cited the wide trade surplus China has enjoyed for years over the U.S. That's $419 billion more in exports to the United States than in America in the goods it's bought in 2018. A coalition of 19 U.S. states in Washington, D.C., announced it will sue the federal government to stop a new rule that would allow migrants seeking asylum in the United States to be detained indefinitely. California Governor Gavin Newsom said the new rule would violate the Flores Agreement, which stipulates that a child cannot be held in immigration detention more than 20 days.
This notion that you can indefinitely intern children in this state is perverse, unconscionable. Clearly in violation of Flores, and clearly warrants this action.
California Attorney General Javier Becerra noted that the 20 state attorneys generals have declared support for the cause.
Those 20 AGs are taking on the Trump administration because we wish to protect children. We wish to protect them from irreparable harm, which may be caused by this unlawful detention orchestrated by the Trump administration.
The rule, published on Friday, is set to take effect in October. The Trump administration argues that migrants with children bet on getting a quicker hearing because of the detention limit. With a draft peace agreement between the United States and the Afghan Taliban circulating after 10 months of negotiations, the insurgent group is pushing a new media campaign, boasting about what it describes as a success of its past strict Islamic rule. The Taliban was routinely condemned for brutal rule and violent tactics during its time in power in Afghanistan from 1996 to 2001, when it denied nearly all girls and women access to education and imposed strict rules over everyday life, like a ban on television. With the group on the verge of signing a peace agreement with the U.S., which could see an end to the 18-year-old Afghan war and the departure of U.S. and coalition troops by the end of 2020, it is revisiting its tenure in power. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. DRC President Felix Tshisekedi unveils his long-awaited coalition government.
No leader from opposition is in this government. Kabila is controlling the finance ministry, mining ministry, justice ministry, defense ministry, and he's controlling the army.
Emery Kawira is the leader of the opposition Congolese Coalition for the Transition. We'll tell you why some Kenyans are objecting to this year's census. Kenya's feminist movement calls for more societal changes. The head of South Sudan's Revenue Authority has been fired, and Liberia's vice president weighs in on some of the causes of the country's worsening economy.
Funding that Liberia was able to receive in terms of taxes and support have somehow been cut down. You know, UNMIL has left, so a lot of finances have left the system. But in the midst of that, you must still, you know, perform your role.
That's Vice President Joel Howard Taylor of Liberia. An app helps African farmers detect crop diseases. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi on Monday unveiled his long-awaited coalition government, described by some as the largest in Congolese history. 23 of the 65-member cabinet comes from President Tshisekedi's Direction for Change party, and the remaining 42 are from former President Joseph Kabila's Common Front for Coalition Government. Key positions like defense, mining, and finance went to the Kabila coalition. Emery Kawira, leader of the opposition Congolese Coalition for the Transition, says the makeup of the government shows that former President Kabila remains the de facto president of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We think that the government of Tshisekedi and Joseph Kabila, it's not their work. For the people, they are only there to rob money, because you see, even in the U.S., you don't have the biggest government of more than 66 ministers. Today, Kabila don't want to leave a power. He's still the main leader of DRC, and Tshisekedi is not the real president. The real president is still Kabila, and that's why we want to call all the people to get up and to put them out and to begin now the good transition with our Popular Salvation Authority.
How do you compare this new government to the previous governments? 65 members of the cabinet, that's a little bit too big, is that right?
It showed that this government will never work for the Congolese interest. They were only going to work for their own interest. And you know that Kabila is controlling the two parliamentary senate and the parliament. The biggest majority of the government composition is from him. That showed that with the Kabila, Congolese people will still be suffering. And that's why we say Mr. Kabila must go out. Because Tshisekedi is not the real president. The real president is Kabila. And now we wish to bring the real change in Congo. This change will help Congolese people to have peace.
Let me ask you, is there anyone from, say, Fayulu's side in the government?
No one opposition leader is in the government. And you need to know that Mr. Tshisekedi, and he has been corrupted by Kabila. And Vital Kamerhe, he's a friend, a long that friend of Kabila. So no leader from opposition is in this government. Therefore, you see, Kabila is controlling the finance ministry, mining ministry, justice ministry, defense ministry, and he's controlling the army and the ministry of the public company that we call in French portefeuille. So everything is in the hand of Joseph Kabila. So we cannot accept the first change. The people need the real change. And this new change must only be possible when we put out Mr. Kabila. And that we want to do this because we know that already Tshisekedi is in intelligence with Kabila for continuing to destroy this country, because 66 ministers in this Congo, this poor country who don't have any production or whatever, we have mining, but Congo is a poorest country today. how we can promise something to the people with the biggest government, which will already eat itself more than 30% of the national budget.
Emerin Kawira is the leader of the opposition Congolese Coalition for the Transition. You're speaking with us from Brussels, Belgium. Liberian Vice President Joao Howard Taylor has attributed some of the causes of Liberia's ailing economy to the drop in aid and revenue generation through taxes. She called for less government spending. Vice President Taylor made the remarks Monday when she appeared on national radio to address issues of national concern. Moses Gazia will report from Monrovia.
Vice President Joao Howard Taylor was emphatic that the economy was performing poorly during the first 2 years of the government. She blames it on poor income generation through taxes and the withdrawal of the United Nations mission from Liberia among as major causes.
Funding that Liberia was able to receive in terms of taxes and support have somehow been cut down. You know, UNMIL has left, so a lot of finances have left the system. We're dealing with a lot in terms of looking at a very slowly performing economy. But in the midst of that, you must still, you know, perform your role.
The Liberian economy is currently in a free fall with high inflation. The local currency has lost value to the United States dollars, while commodity prices are escalating. Recently, the government has embarked on cost-cutting measures, including massive reduction in earnings of most government workers. The vice president says she wants government functionaries to be proactive in sourcing fundings to support some development programs.
So let's become proactive and begin to just move around. I've realized that even where I sit, you know, I get to a point where, you know, I don't have money for something, I have to think, where do I get money from? How does somebody help me raise the money? And sometimes there is a lot out there that we can access. So can we now work together and see what can be done?
Vice President Taylor has meanwhile challenged the National Elections Commission to do everything possible in curtailing the recent wave of election violence in the country, particularly as the country gears up for midterm senatorial election next year.
Let's talk about the issues and let everybody go in an environment where they are able to vote freely. The Election Commission has a responsibility also to ensure that people have their schedules so that you will not have a fight, so that people can, you know, campaign freely. All of that work must be done before time.
In recent weeks, there have been waves of election violence between opposition and ruling party supporters in a by-elections in the capital, Monrovia. Vice President Taylor has meanwhile recommended a separate institution be formed to take over from the Elections Commission in conducting civic and voter education, something she said has somewhat been neglected by the NEC.
They are reneging on even helping with the civic and voters education. I'm one of those who believe that should be taken from the Election Commission, like you know, to somebody else who will be their duty every day to decide how we treat our children. We need to put civics back in the schools so that children learn what it is, what democracy is.
Some analysts see next year as a litmus test for the Elections Commission, as Liberians will go to the polls to elect 15 new senators in midterm elections. For VOA News, this is Moses Gazel reporting from Monrovia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 27th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. At least 35 people were charged Monday with incitement during Kenya's ongoing week-long census that began August 24. Speaking Monday, Interior Ministry Principal Secretary Karanja Kibichu said the 35 were arrested on charges ranging from providing false information to interfering with the enumeration exercise. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
The residents of Baringo South in Baringo County took it to the streets after alleged incitement by their member of county assembly, Josphat Leparsalat, and area chief Francis Ole Kiprich, who are said to have obstructed the exercise by asking the area residents to resist being enumerated. Interior Ministry Principal Secretary Karenja Kibicho said that the arrested are being charged in different courts across the country, as he urges Kenyans to turn up for the exercise.
We have had 35 reported of such cases, Some of them are already in court. The others are being processed. I think we have 16 or 15 matters before court as we speak, and the others are being processed.
The security of enumerators has been questioned as most of them risk late in the night, especially in rural areas. On Saturday night, a lady enumerator was gang raped. Immediately, she was dropped home after the exercise, as others reported cases of the enumeration tools being vandalized by hostile Kenyans. As per the enumerator's feedback, some Kenyans hesitate to give the right information for fear of the security of the information. However, the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics Managing Director Zachary Mwangi has assured Kenyans of safety of the data being collected.
Kenyans should rest assured that their data is secure, because we had actually taken into consideration all issues relating to data security. I'll tell you for sure, we have three sites in which we are actually storing this data, and it is all replicated in the three sites. Worst case scenario is that even if we have an incident in one of the sites, there will be another site that will be able to pick up, and transmission will still go on.
This year's census exercise has been marred with a lot of challenges as the government closed down entertainment joints such as bars and clubs for the first 2 days to enable the exercise run effectively. But now, Mr. Kibicho has lifted the order and the joints can run their businesses as usual.
I started by saying that today the bars can open at the official opening time of bars, which is 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. The census period started 24th, 25th, and shall close on 31st of August. If you're in a place and you think you want to leave the house and you are seeing an enumerator, make a move.
As per the 2009 statistics, Kenya's population is estimated at 40 million people. The exercise is set to end on 31st Saturday of this month. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiombo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A growing feminism movement in Kenya is calling on leaders to address the high rates of femicide in the country. Nancy Houston Uya, founder of Feminist in Kenya, spoke to Ricky Stryak about their rallying efforts to make changes for women at the highest level of society.
Total Shutdown KE, we wanted Kenya to come to a standstill. We wanted Kenyans and the government, both national and county, to realize that women are dying in Kenya and you guys are not talking about it. So that is why we called it Total Shutdown KE. KE is Kenya, right? So the main purpose of the march to have the government of Kenya declare violence against women and girls a national disaster. So we drafted a memorandum of demand and organized as young feminist women. Didn't declare femicide a national emergency, but he did talk about it during our Independence Day celebrations. He acknowledged it as a problem, and he said that the government would come up with a national task force to deal with the problem that is violence against women and girls. Yeah.
Has the national task force been formed yet?
Yes, the national task force has been formed already, and the government is working with a couple of CSOs.
Recently in Kenya, I believe a woman parliamentary member was kicked out of parliament for breastfeeding. Do you guys have a position on that? Have you guys done anything to rally around that?
Yes, of course. It was a woman parliamentarian from Kwale when she was breastfeeding a baby. And of course, this kind of blatant audacity is something that is only capable with a deeply seated patriarchal system. Yeah, it's only the patriarchy that can have the audacity to do something like that. I mean, other countries like Australia, we saw women, the parliamentarian from Australia, talking in parliament and breastfeeding a baby, and it was okay. Yeah, it was okay. Like, they could not separate her role as a mother and her role as a parliamentarian. She could do both all at once.
And I know you guys are, I'm sure, supporters of Stella Nyanzi in Uganda. Is Feminists in Kenya, are they of that school of thought of radical rudeness, refusing to go by the rules of politeness?
Oh, first of all, I think I have to say that we absolutely love Stella Nyanzi. She's the face of the freedom that we want. We don't just want to be free for a day. We don't just want to be free for weeks or for a month. We want to be free forever. And she's the face, she's the epitome of the freedom that our feminists in Kenya are fighting for. And on respectability, we are not respectable women. We are not we are not good women. We are not nice women. We fight for what we fight for because we want freedom. And if we are respectable, then I don't think we're going to have that freedom. We do not pander to power. We do not pander to power like, you know, whatever, capitalism, religion, culture. We do not pander the government. We do not pander to that. We say what we say.
That was Nancy Houston Uya, founder of Feminist in Kenya. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Nairobi. South Sudan Finance Minister Salvatore Garang on Friday fired Olympio Atipo, the country's revenue authority chief. A Juba-based economist says Atipo's firing will pave the way for those opposed to the new system to evade taxes. Lasuba Memo has more from Juba.
Tax Revenue Authority Commissioner Olympio Atipo confirmed to the Voice of America he was fired shortly after receiving his termination letter on Friday.
I also received that letter from the Minister of Finance, relieving him from office and terminating the board members. By law, the president was supposed to terminate my contract anyway. But this is the situation here. So I am around. I'll write my report and present to the president before I leave.
In July, Atipo said the Revenue Authority collected $36 million and about 28 million South Sudanese pounds between January and June, a huge increase over previous years. In late July, Atipo accused finance ministry officials of receiving cash remittances from the Revenue Authority, saying, quote, "Some may be eating this money, who knows?" South Sudan in Focus obtained a copy of a bank overdraft from South Sudan Central Bank for the Tax Revenue Authority's account. A bank overdraft in economic terms allows the account holder, in this case the finance ministry, to continue withdrawing money even when the account has no funds in it or has insufficient funds to cover the withdrawal. Atipo says the overdraft is a proof of what had been going on.
They will tell you that the whole minister is confused running around. We'll tell you that they've not received the money. Meanwhile, you have taken overdraft from the central bank, so the money we are sent to the overdraft, and you say you don't receive. You are eating behind, nobody knows. I'm telling you, they are lying.
Deputy Minister of Finance John Dor denies finance ministry officials were withdrawing funds from the Tax Revenue Authority's bank account.
It's not that we talk about it, but it is there. We receive it. We put it according to the budget lines, according to the items that have been enumerated. But we don't need to talk about it. In fact, what is not really normal is that I think our friends from the National Revenue Authority would like always to advertise it, to talk, go to media and say we have done that. And this is not our habit, of course.
In July, Atipo said finance officials approved tax write-offs for a multiple million-dollar construction company identified as RAC Resource Group. A finance ministry letter approving the request for Iraq's tax exemption dated June 14, it states the company planned to import factory service, equipment, medical items, fuel, agricultural and petroleum products, construction materials and food worth more than $490 million. Ahmed Morjan, a lecturer of economics at the University of Juba, says Salvatore Garang has no authority to remove Atipo.
It's the president who to have the highest mandate to terminate his service or to fire him. So it was like a surprise to me, have the commissioner being fired by Minister of Finance. The Minister of Finance would have recommended the dismissal or whatever should happen to him. Then the president actually passes the decree. Because once you're appointed by decree, and it is by decree that you should be removed.
Morgan says the Revenue Authority is not fully established, and removing Atipo will negatively affect the tax collection system. He warns those opposed to Atipo's administrative style will take advantage of his absence to abuse the system. It remains unclear if President Kiir will reverse Garang's decision. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo reporting in Juba.
A team of Cameroonian entrepreneurs has created a mobile application that helps farmers detect crop diseases. The app also proposes treatments and offers prevention measures. And Unzuan Q reports from Benguela, as narrated by Moki Edwin Kinzeka.
It has become a ritual. Every time he visits his farm, Alain Letbu uses an app to monitor the health of his tomatoes. It detects crop disease and suggests treatments and prevention measures. With it, Letbu says he spends less and produces more.
Cette application change énormément dans la production.
Letbu now uses an app called Agrix. Using the app is simple. The user focuses the phone's camera on a leaf or fruit. The application analyzes the image and gives the results within a few seconds. Agrix co-founder Dorothee Vondo says the app is still in development but has already been tested by hundreds of farmers.
Agrix ayant détecté la maladie propose.
Joseph Mpo is an agronomist and trainer at the School of Agriculture of Bingela, a state agricultural school. He's tested the app and says it's promising, although some improvements are still needed. Mvondo says the plan is to roll out the app across Africa, beginning in 2020. She trained at the State Institute of Agricultural Research for Development. Now she hopes the app will give farmers real solutions and options, since the pesticides sold in the shops are mostly chemical. The potential impact of such an app could be significant, she says. According to the Center for Agriculture and Biosciences International, farmers in Africa lose an estimated 49% of expected total crop yield per year, the highest rate of crop loss in the world. For Anne Zwanke in Bingela, Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzeka, for VOA News.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi on Monday unveiled his long-awaited coalition government, described by some as the largest in Congolese history. 23 of the 65-member cabinet comes from President Tshisekedi's Direction for Change Party, and the remaining 42 are from former President Joseph Kabila's Common Front for Congo Coalition. Key positions like defense, mining, and finance went to the Kabila Coalition. Emery Kawira, the leader of the opposition Congolese Coalition for the Transition, says the makeup of the government shows that former President Kabila remains the de facto president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Liberian Vice President Jua Howard Taylor has attributed some of the causes of Liberia's ailing economy to the drop in aid and revenue generation through taxes. She called for less government spending. Vice President Taylor made the remarks Monday when she appeared on national radio to address issues of national concern. French President Emmanuel Macron and the African Development Bank have launched a $300 million initiative to boost the business owned by African women. The initiative was announced at the G7 summit in Biarritz, France, and is aimed at increasing credit access to African business women across the continent over a 5-year period. That is it for this Tuesday, August 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Ricky Stryak and Peter Clotty, and along with our sports editor, Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter.